Hi, everyone. You're listening to Pharmacy Focus Oncology Edition, where we bring you the latest trends in the oncology pharmacy space. I'm your host, Alex Gerlach, and today I'm sharing the inspiring story of Alan Rappert and Dr. Jason Williams. Alan is a resident of St. Louis who was diagnosed with stage 4 squamous cell carcinoma of the maxillary sinus, and his prognosis was pretty poor. The cancer had spread into the bones around his eye and skull and was inching dangerously close to his brain. At that point, traditional treatments offered little hope. But then something unexpected happened. Under the care of Dr. Williams at the Williams Cancer Institute, his tumor was directly targeted using intratumoral immunotherapy. And as of today, Alan is basically considered cancer-free. So in this episode, we'll hear his remarkable story, we'll explore the science behind intratumoral immunotherapy, and we'll speak with Dr. Williams about what this treatment could mean for the future of cancer care. This is actually the first time that I've brought a patient on to the podcast as well. So I'm even more excited for this episode. So thank you, Alan, for your willingness to join us today and also for sharing your story. I think that we spend a lot of time in the medical space talking about our patients, but not always hearing from them. So just to get us started, Alan, I'm going to turn it over to you and you can share personal experience with your cancer journey.
Well, first off, it works. I'm cancer free. So what he's doing is changing cancer for everyone. And it's just amazing. The first time I Zoomed, doc, I was here in St. Louis and they wanted to do exactly what doc explained about the surgery. And I would lose maybe my eye and teeth and, you know, and I said, oh, will I be okay then? No, probably 3 to 4 years, 40% chance of living that long. And I've got more patients dead than alive with what you have. And I'm like, well, then I'm not doing this. So I started praying for knowledge and healing and started doing research and found doc. Thomas Seyfried is a Boston University scientist that does a lot of work with the cancer community. And so I followed him and then he put me on to doc with the things that he was doing. And so contacted doc and did my research on him and his squamous cell that I had, he was really good at. And I Zoomed him and he said to me, I don't want you to be worrying about this. He goes, we're going to beat it. And when you're all clear, we're going to do a video testimonial. And he flew me and my girlfriend in 5 weeks ago to make the testimonial. Wow. A little over a year and a half later. Yep.
So do you want to talk a little bit about your diagnosis? What were some of the things that led you to go see care from a doctor?
Sure. I'm diabetic and I kept my eye wouldn't close and on my right side. And I kept getting eye infections because, you know, if your eye's exposed and you're not blinking and refreshing, then your eye's susceptible. So I kept getting infection after infection and my eye wasn't closing all the way. And I had Bell's palsy years ago and they thought maybe that was part of it. And then with me being diabetic, they thought maybe my face muscles were getting weak. So I told my eye doctor, I said, you know, I got a spot here that's kind of sore all the time. And he pushed on it. And so he's like, let's go get a MRI of that. Got it. He calls me up and he goes, you need to go see a oncologist. And I had lost my wife 2 years prior to stage 4 cancer and my father and my aunt. And I knew what that meant. And I'm like, I got cancer. Walked in. I even told the doctor I got cancer here in St. Louis. And he's like, yeah. And he goes, you know, we're going to have to get in there and, you know, cut it and basically take half your face off, like doc said, and take the skin off of your thigh and your artery out of your thigh. Cause you're going to lose your eye and artery up there and put that back. And you'll be in intensive care 14 days and you'll probably still die. I'm like, oh, I'm not doing that. So
yeah,
doc said, I'm going to beat it. And he did. And I went down to Cabo and I was supposed to be there 3 weeks. And doc said to me, I'll never forget. He goes, it'll take the U.S. another 10 years to approve this medicine I'm giving you here. That's why I have to do it here. If I did it in the States, I'd lose my license. And I'm like, that's silly. And he gave me my first treatment and it swelled up like a Roman tomato. And I went back the second week and he goes, oh boy, that cancer's angry. And he goes, I'm not touching it. You got to be here 2 more weeks. I go, hey, I'm in Cabo. I don't care. I'll be here, doc, as long as you want.
Of course.
Right. So I stayed. I was delayed 2 weeks. Then I got my second treatment, third treatment. He sent me home. Come back. I had a little piece left for my fourth treatment. I went to Mexico City for that one. And he hit it. And then the fifth time was basically preventive. And then after that, I scanned, sent it to him. And he said, okay, it's time to make the testimonial. You're clear.
Yeah. So were you ever treated with chemotherapy or other agents prior? You went right to the intratumoral.
I wasn't going to do it. If I hadn't found Doc, I was going to go out like a bottle rocket because I wasn't going to get cut. I wasn't doing it. I'm diabetic. The risk of infection in hospitals is great. So I was just going to ride it out because I wasn't, like Doc said, I wasn't going to look like a jack-o'-lantern and go through all that and not have any hope of getting well. And then when you go from that and not sleeping and looking at your family and your friends and thinking you're going to be gone. And just, I mean, it's like you're on death row and you're waiting for the governor to call, that feeling. And then the governor called Doc and said, I'm going to beat it. And he did. And he's doing it every day. And it's I'm on the ground floor of changing cancer for everybody, thanks to Doc. And I'm proud to be here because I'm getting the word out the best I can. Because like Doc said, when we were in Beverly Hills, he goes, you know, Monday, they're going to be disfiguring again. They're going to be giving radiation again all over the country. And he goes, and they're going to be giving, you know, sticking it into the tumor for a check. And he goes, just like he said, if you're going to stick it, put my medicine in it. And that's what he did to me. And that's what he's doing to everyone else. And his success rate is unbelievable.
So diving into the type of treatment Ellen received, Dr. Williams, can you share a bit about yourself and how you found yourself researching and treating patients with intratumoral immunotherapy?
Sure. Yeah. So yeah, I'm Jason Williams, and my work, you know, mainly is obviously in intratumoral immunotherapies and ablations. You know, my original inspiration, you know, was when I was young, I saw my grandmother get breast cancer. She died of breast cancer. And I watched the process. You know, I was 10. She died when I was 12. So I got to see that, you know, almost 2 years of her going through mastectomy, radiation, chemo. And I thought, my gosh, I was like, there's got to be a better way. And she still died. So I was like, she went through all this stuff and yet she didn't live. And so I thought, this is just horrible in every way. And like, we've got to be able to do something better. We can't really just accept that this is cancer treatment. So, you know, that led me to want to be a doctor, to want to be, you know, a scientist. And I tried, you know, from my initial start in college to get towards the areas of cancer research. I was fortunate that I got into some cancer research projects, you know, at a very early age. I mean, only, you know, a year or two of my college career. You know, I was like 19, 20 years old, and I was involved in cancer research doing gene therapies, and we were injecting into tumors, and I was seeing, you know, we were curing all these mice. I was like, oh, this is amazing. Like, here we are. I think we got it. We got the cure. And I remember, you know, asking like, okay, this is great. What's going to happen to this next? And I'm like, oh, they're going to take it into clinical trials. And I was like, yeah, this is going to be amazing. We're going to see some really good results. And when they took it in clinical trials, I was following it. What was going on? And the results weren't good. And you know why? They didn't inject in the tumors. We injected in the tumor. They gave it intravenous in the clinical trial. Doesn't work the same. And we knew this in the animals. And I mean, I talked to the people. I said, hey, we know it doesn't work intravenous. These drugs don't work intravenous. They work. We're curing mice because we're injecting in their tumors. And, I said, so why are we not injecting in the tumors in the humans? And they're like, well, it's too difficult. You know, it's just too hard to do. So I'm only like 20 years old. So I accept that. But then when I get to medical school, you know, a few years later, you know, my first year in medical school is a lecture in interventional radiology. And the guy's like, hey, you know, interventional radiology, what we do, we use imaging, we stick needles in tumors and biopsy them all over the place. Wait a minute. I was like, if you can biopsy it, you can stick a needle in it, then you can inject the drug. Why are we not doing that? And so I thought that I wanted to be a medical oncologist, but I realized I needed to be a radiologist. I mean, I wanted to treat cancer, but to have the skill, I needed to go into radiology. And I could learn all the oncology, but, you know, I needed that. So that's why I went into radiology and went in the direction that I did. And they, in radiology, they were working on areas of doing what's called ablation, where you stick needles into tumors and you can kill tumors with, you know, radio frequency or other techniques. And I was fascinated with that. I was just fascinated with whatever way going straight to the tumor. I just didn't understand why are we not, when we're treating cancer, why do we not go to the tumor? Why do you think that everything's intravenous and oral, but you're not putting it right at the source? And so that was, you know, then it kind of went from there. And one of the things that I saw with ablation was that we could kill some of the tumor, and occasionally the immune system would see the cancer and it would get rid of the patient's cancer completely. And when I saw that in a couple of cases, I was like, there's got to be a way we can make this happen more. And so if we start injecting, you know, different drugs, different immunotherapy drugs, we'll get the immune system to see the cancer and attack it. And that's the direction that I've gone. And now, of course, we've gotten to very advanced, you know, using lots of combinations of immunotherapies, and the ablation techniques have evolved. Now, currently, we have a technique that's called pulse electrical field, which is a technique that basically shocks the tumor. Like, so you put a needle in there and it sends like a super high voltage, but so fast that doesn't, like, you don't see anything happen. But it causes the cells to, like, you know, open up, and the cancer dies in a way that attracts the immune system. And this is different than some of the other ablative techniques. Superior, I mean, cryoablation has some, radio frequency and microwave have less. But this is kind of the, you know, the techniques. Oh, that's kind of how then we got into what we're doing, and now we're pretty advanced.
Yeah. So in that case, maybe you can talk a little bit about, and this might be kind of broad, but about squamous cell carcinoma, and in a general sense, but maybe just also diving into Alan's specific case before we move over to him.
Yeah. So within squamous cells, you know, these are cells that typically are all along the lining of surfaces. And so, you know, they can occur anywhere in the head and neck, the lung. I mean, there's cervical cancers. I mean, all sorts of stuff that can be from this tissue type, you know, but it would be a tissue type that would resemble somewhat like the skin, but, you know, internally. Mm-hmm. And so those cells, obviously they're experiencing like outside, like environmental exposure, more viruses. A lot of these cancers of like the head and neck are created from HPV. So HPV normally we would consider, you know, for cervical cancer, but obviously we know it's head and neck cancer. I think it's even beyond that. I think it actually may go into many cancer types. And HPV is much more prevalent than I think people think. I mean, I think it's a lot of people have it. And so that's, of course, why HPV vaccinations do reduce these incidences of these cancers. But yeah, there's other things, you know, environmental exposure, you know, if somebody's a smoker or any of those other things, or, you know, what, maybe the type of work they do, they're breathing some sort of dust, something that creates a chronic like irritation along those lining of the cells, and then makes them have copying errors and mutations that then lead to the cancer development. And so, you know, in Alan's case, being a head and neck cancer, you know, it's a location for us. It's accessible. We can get to it. The other is that surgically, you know, that would be the normal way that they would look to try to do this. It would be super disfiguring, and they probably couldn't get all the cancer. I mean, his cancer had eaten to the bone, was eating through the skull. It had eaten a hole through his temporal bone and was going to the temporal lobe of the brain. And so there's no, surgically, you're not going to get all that. And if they did, it would be massive and it would be super disfiguring and problematic. But then again, it probably wouldn't work. So by going into the tumor, treating it directly and getting, you know, the immune system to attack the cancers is the best way.
Dr. Williams, maybe you can give us some more insight into the specific treatment that Alan received.
Yeah. And of course, you know, we have several things. One, and you know, we're trying to develop this and get, you know, we've got official clinical trials. We've developed a drug that's called SyncT. We have a company, Syncermune. And so that's That's we have clinical trials going on in the U.S. now for this. So we're advancing this. We're trying to get it, mainstream. It's just, have to go through the process. It was difficult because nobody wanted to put money behind it because, they want to put money behind all the individual drugs, but they didn't really see like injecting in the tumor as being a market. So nobody wanted to fund it. So it took us a while to be able to get the backing behind it to be able to do these things. But yeah, the thing is that there's immunotherapy drugs. So normally people look at drugs like PD-1 inhibitors, like Opdivo and Keytruda. You've got, CTLA-4 inhibitor, Yervoy. Then you've got, of course, the drug Opdualag, which is a PD-1, a LAG-3. Now, we know that you can inject those in the tumor with ablation and it works really well. I mean, those better than it does just intravenous. But and even James Allison, who discovered CTLA-4 inhibitors, did studies in mice showing that injecting in the tumors was superior. Ronald Levy at Stanford, all of them shown that taking these same drugs. The one thing is that because we have drugs in development and clinical trials that we can do this in the US, but it's challenging because like you have the right to try. So there are certain things that we could do, but hospital costs are very expensive. And there's a big cost issue. Whereas in Mexico, those costs are less because your insurance is not going to want to pay for it because they consider experimental. So but then also in Mexico has a right to try as well, that their right to try is a little broader. So they can use lots of drugs that are all in clinical trials. So we're able to pull from lots of different drugs. And in a case like his, we're using, not only CTLA-4 and a PD-1, we're using a drug called CPG. We're using LAG-3, we're using B7H3, and we're using a CD40 agonist. I mean, so we're using like multiple combinations of immunotherapies. Our SYNCT drug is a four drug combination that works really well. And we have our published data from the AACR prostate cancer clinical trial that stuff is, shows that. But the future development is more drugs. Where we're seeing the results, four will definitely make a major improvement. Eight really starts, you really start getting a lot of changes. 12 and 14 drugs, that's when you start seeing where you might say, this is the answer to everything,
Yeah.
maybe.
So, Alan, what was your experience on the treatment? Did you like have any, were there any obstacles? I mean, I know you were in Cabo, so you were
Right.
obviously having a good time to some
Yeah.
extent, but
I had swelling. The only thing I had, I was not sick. The only thing I had was the swelling. And the swelling really odd to me. And now that I think about it, doc, the swelling wasn't even that painful. It was just I was tired. So
Makes you
I
tired.
slept. Yeah. I slept a lot. Like I said, no chemo, vomiting, nothing like that. I was just tired of sleepy. And then I'd slept a lot. And my girlfriend Cynthia came with me the entire time, every time. And she was working from our hotel. She would go get the medicine that doc would get. Have me take and stuff like that from their pharmacies down there for pain or whatever, so I wouldn't hurt, in case I needed it. And actually, I had a pain patch put on any pain I did have. They took care of it, so I was just, it was tender, obviously, but I was just tired. And after I would sleep for a while, then we'd go to the beach, and I'd thank God and Doc and go back and get another treatment. And
Well,
after
and I
five
have
of them.
to say, when you're in a good environment, when you're feeling, emotionally, mentally pretty good space, that makes all the difference when it comes to treatment and health outcomes in general. So, being in a high stress environment, your body is not gonna, you're gonna be stressed out. Your body's not gonna do all the things that it
Right.
needs to. So, obviously, there were benefits for you going to Cabo, just looking at access to the treatment itself, but maybe there was also a really positive outcome from you being in that really good environment.
And the hotel we Doc had us stay at is connected to his hospital. So you just literally walk out of your hotel, walk up the ramp, and you're right there at Doc. So there's no stress getting to somewhere on time. And I'll tell you another thing, the hospitals Doc works out of, it you can eat off the floor. They're wonderful. So anybody thinking anything about Mexico, they're
That's good.
wrong because it's great. I mean, Doc has a great group down there and they're so warm and wonderful. And like you said, you've already got everything on your mind about, and I'll tell you what, Doc, my son, when he saw our podcast, he goes, "Dad, I'm proud of you." He goes, I didn't know. He goes, I was worried because everybody in our family's in the medical field on his side, his in-laws. And they're like, what are you doing? You got to go get that taken out. What are you doing? And I'm like, no, I'm not. There's a better way and I'm going to find it. And what's funny is before I even knew how Doc got on this field with his grandma, I told my girlfriend when I got diagnosed and was going through it before I even met Doc, I said, it's going to take someone, which is Doc now, that's tired of losing their family members. And they're going to say there's a better way. And I don't know if it's clairvoyance, Doc, but I'll put word for word, basically what you said about your grandma is exactly what I said to her. It's going to take somebody to bust away from the way we're doing it because it's not working. And it's Dr. Williams. And I can't thank him enough. He saved my life, saving lives every day. And I'm going to make sure that everybody I can hear me or know me or see me knows about it because it's called telephone, telegraph, and tell Big Al. And I'm Big Al. So it's out there. I'm going to do it.
So considering obviously that this treatment was so effective for you, you are cancer free. How long have you been cancer free for?
What do you say, Doc? 5 months?
No, it's been longer than that though. Yeah.
Oh, was it? When was the last scan? I forgot. I don't.
Yeah. I think you've been technically for at least a year now.
Oh, okay.
So obviously one thing, you know, just keep in mind for any cancer patient, we have to monitor them for 5 years. We cannot consider them cured until they achieve 5 years.
Right.
So obviously he's in complete remission. But we'll keep monitoring. Now, if something should pop up, we can obviously just retreat. That's the easy thing about it is that, you know, we could fix it, but hopefully we've got him past that where this will never come back.
Doc, you said something that you put stuff in me that's going to be there for the rest of my life.
Well, it won't be like that, but like the thing is that we teach the immune system to attack the cancer. So it's like you're vaccinated against the cancer, right?
Yeah. How many meds did you put in me?
Oh gosh. Well, we definitely did at least this eight or nine medications. Wow.
Yeah. Gotcha. And you added a couple on the last ones.
We
Dr.
Make
Vargas said.
Yeah. So we make modifications on the patients too. I mean, like, so we have certain, it's not always like just the same. And first thing is we look and analyze, like, what are the genetics of the cancer? What are the things that we know that are going? And so are there different drugs that we should use? Most people, when they look at immunotherapy, they're only looking at like things like PD-1, but we look way beyond that. And so we can look at all the different parts of the cancer and see what things we can hit it with.
So where do you see this treatment, Dr. Williams, taking oncology care for patients like Alan, and even beyond that?
Yeah.
Because obviously this is really promising. Are you seeing growth in the intratumoral specific treatment space?
It's finally gaining ground now. You know, for so many years, people didn't really see it. But I think now that they're seeing it, now that we're bringing them more results, that it's getting more attention. And we're trying to educate all the doctors doing it. It's not just us. We want everybody doing this. You know, this, we need to get this to more people. You know, the future for this would be that treatment would start at the time of biopsy. I mean, when you stick a needle in tumor and you're going to sample it, that's your chance to also treat it at that moment. You shouldn't be biopsying it and then leave it alone, wait weeks, months, and then treat it. You should do it at that point. That's where we want to take the future, where basically you get diagnosed with cancer, you get treated, and you're fixed, and you're left the same as you were before you had cancer. And that's where things will be, but we have to do the process of getting it there. I mean, you know, unfortunately in medicine and science, in particular this, you know, we have to get, like, you know, FDA approvals, because that is going to be necessary to get insurances to pay. So we're having to do all this and show that, hey, this is the way to do it, and they should cover this, and that's what we're trying to do.
My tumor doubled in size when they biopsied me, and I didn't know, and this was prior to Doc, but they biopsied me in St. Louis, and by the time I got to Doc, my tumor, it almost doubled in size. And Doc says, when you poke a tumor without putting his medicine in it, all you're doing is making it angry. And I'm here to tell you that that's exactly what happened to me. It almost went double in the 6 weeks before I could get to see Doc. And it had already progressed, as like Doc explained, all the way up to my brain. And that and that we could see that tumor. Doc saw it when I sent him all my records. From the time of the biopsy, it just took off. And it, Doc said, it's angry and it didn't have his medicine in it. Doc said, when I made the video with him, said, if you're going to stick it, put my medicine in it, darn it.
Something you could even, you can just put ketorolac. I mean, there's like, that's the thing we try to get with biopsies. They need to change the way they do it, where if you do a biopsy, you should at least inject a little bit of medication into it. But you can inject ketorolac, you can inject the flu vaccine, you can inject all sorts of things. Like, you know, that's a, like, there's so many things that are inexpensive that you could put into the tumor at the time that you biopsy it that will make it better. But this is not standard, but that's what we should be doing. It would be easy to do.
And the most important thing is sharing all of this knowledge, because that's how you're going to get it to the patients that need it, is advocating for this type of treatment, showing how successful it is. And I mean, so far, obviously, you know, we can't say that he is cured, as you mentioned before, but Alan here is in complete remission, and he obviously had pretty aggressive disease by the time that he got to you. So Alan, you know, just starting to wrap us up here, I'm wondering if you have anything that you would like to share with other patients that have the same cancer or have different cancers.
Right. First thing you do is do not let him biopsy you, because that just makes it worse. Doc said, stick a flu vaccine in it, anything. Just don't stick it and walk away, because all you're doing is making it worse, to where you're decreasing your odds of getting well, A. And B, call Dr. Jason Williams immediately and don't do another thing until he looks at all your records and tests and let him determine. As they always say, get a second opinion. Well, after Doc Williams, you won't need one, because he's the opinion that counts. So you'll probably get diagnosed here in the U.S. or wherever you're at around the world, but then call Dr. Jason Williams, because I'm here to tell you, I probably wouldn't be here without him. And he's curing and treating and has great success rates with cancer. In layman's terms, he healed me. So we got to get the word out, quit biopsying. And United States needs to listen to this man. He's dedicated his life to it because of his grandmother, and it works, and I'm proof, and I'm not the only one. Doc's got a lot of them, he could tell you, but I'm one of them, and I'm proud of it.
And it sucks, you know, sometimes patients, like, you have to go digging and searching to find the right person that will give you the care that you need. You can go and stay local to your community and go to a doctor, or, you know, and get second opinions and whatnot. But maybe there is someone else that's unfortunately further away from you that actually has a method or an approach that would be beneficial.
We met a couple when we were in Cabo for my first three treatments, that they were staying there, and the lady was stage four, had it all over her body. She was a bodybuilder, and her husband said, we spent over $1 million in the States and they couldn't help her. And we found Dr. Williams. He gave her three treatments and we're back for 4, 5, and 6. And, I think she's doing good, isn't she, Doc?
I don't know specifically which patient. I hope so. I mean, most of her patients are doing well. So yeah.
She was a bodybuilder. Yeah. She had pictures of her on stage.
I have a couple bodybuilder patients.
Yeah. Well, the husband told me that 80% of her cancer was gone after only three treatments from Doc, and they spent $1 million in the States and they couldn't help her. And thank God they found him. So I think when we talked that she was doing good, or she was pretty much clear. So that's just, you know, to spend $1 million and don't get any help. You're right. It's a puzzle. And the more we can get it out to where people are accessible, the chances are they can find Doc and get treated. Because if you don't turn the right way on the right webpage or research the right spot, you don't find them. And that's sad.
And there's so much information on the internet too, you know, and knowing how to find the people, knowing what to search can be really, really difficult.
Yep. I did. So I guess God sent me to him, because he knows that God made me with a big mouth. So here I am. I'm doing my best.
Yeah, we just want to try to reach more patients and more doctors. I mean, the more doctors that we can get doing this, this is not a thing like we're saying, oh, we're the only ones that do it. And no, we want other people doing it. We share information. Any doctors, they want to come work with me. They want to, we try to help them, because we just want to reach more patients. That's the important thing, because people are suffering that don't need to. And the faster that we can get this information out, we can help save people, you know, not only save lives, but save their quality of life.
And that when Doc says that, can you imagine that you develop something that's so powerful that you're saving people's lives and it doesn't have to come through him? He just wants to get the word out. Who does that? Dr. Williams does, and he's a miracle worker.
Yeah, well, and again, that's the way that we advance medicine and that we advance cancer care, is by sharing this information with fellow doctors, fellow patients, and people with cancer to help that community. You might have touched on this a little bit more, a little bit before, Dr. Williams, but what do you see the future being for cancer care in this case?
Yeah, well, I think in the future, definitely, you will identify patients with a potential cancer, either one, like looking for like tumor DNA in the blood as a screening, or, you know, whole body MRIs. I mean, all these type of things like that, the ways that you, and when a person has a potential cancer, when you first address it, when you're going to need to sample it, you go ahead and plan to start treating at that moment. And that's how we need to develop theirs. I mean, we're working on trying to make like a biopsy system that will do pulse electrical field. So you biopsy it and then you actually start treating it and you can inject drugs at that time. So that's the future. And I think if we do that, we will see our cancer success significantly increase, because you don't get these patients in advanced state where we go, we biopsy, wait weeks or months before we start treating them. And then they get surgery, chemo. All these things are delayed, but we started right from the biopsy.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Williams and Alan, for jumping on today. I really appreciate it. Like I said, we don't normally have patient voices here. So thank you for being so open to sharing your story. I really look forward to seeing, you know, how Dr. Williams' work continues to advance cancer care.
Yep.
And you could, you know, I think, I don't know if you've seen our stuff with Synchromune, you know, is our drug with like SyncT. That's our clinical trials that we have going on in the U.S. And there's numerous sites throughout the U.S. So that could be helpful for people, because like we can't treat everybody. Not everybody could come to Mexico or any other place that we could do it. But we have U.S. trials. So that's options for them. Those are, you know, those are funded. That's free for the patients. So, you know, I would encourage people to look at those things.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode. I hope you enjoyed hearing Alan's story and are inspired and curious about innovations like intratumor immunotherapy. We'll be back again next month with another episode, so stay tuned and I'll see you next time.